Hey, horse lovers. I hope you enjoy this recording of a conversation I had with some very dedicated students in May of 2022. Make sure to check out my website at www.thecoachchristy.com to find out more about how you can join my online services and learn from my experience. I'd love to have you. Thanks for listening. Get into this week's subject. And, you know, like I've said before, I often choose the topic for the week based on sort of what's in front of me. So Jan and Leanne were here last week, and we had a lot of conversations around, you know, when do I use pressure, like escalating pressure, versus when do I use the stay in the boat strategies, right? So pressure, and, you know, sort of the way we learn about it in Pirelli land, is an important piece of the process, right? Being able to apply pressure gradually and predictably until the horse understands how to process pressure, that you know, pressure is meant to guide you to a place, like it's directing you somewhere. Then that's how I would apply pressure. I got to help out with a couple of rescue horses these last couple of days, and they have no concept of pressure. Their instincts are still telling them what to do with pressure. And for horses, instinct means will tell them push, you know, push into pressure, resist pressure, lean, yield, pull, do whatever you got to do to get away from pressure, because pressure is dangerous. That's how they're wired. So if you tried to use the stay in the boat strategies with them, and I'll describe that in a minute, if you try to use those strategies, it won't make any sense to them. It'll probably just make them more afraid, right? So it's important that you understand there is a time and a place for gradually escalating pressure. All that being said, the middle levels of pressure is never something I'm shooting for. So even just after this last email, I just sent out a newsletter type email, and somebody asked me, what happened to like phase two? I'm like, I don't do it anymore. You know, I've gotten so many communications over the years, like, oh, I'm so happy I got it done at phase two. That's not something to be happy about. If you're using phase two to achieve a task or anything, you're just physically manipulating the body. You're just pushing and pulling them around the way you'd move furniture across the living room floor. And it's not the end of the world, especially if the horse is okay with it. If they sort of get that that's what you're doing, and they don't, you know, it doesn't bother them in some way, whether it makes them tense or grumpy, then you get along for a while. But if you do that for very long, they get disassociated. They get dull. They get in a spot, the stuff I make up about it is it puts them in a mindset that I am not mentally required to be here. I don't need to use my brain for this conversation. You can manipulate my body however you see fit. That's okay. I like you well enough that I'm going to put up with that, but they don't ever mentally engage. So you're going to reach the height of mediocrity, right? If you have a tolerant horse, Maxie will not put up with that shit. If you use, you know, what we know to be phase two and three, she will flat out ignore you. She will lean and push. So some horses won't tolerate. Mules often do not tolerate that. They will not put up with being pushed and pulled around with a moderate, you know, even low amount of pressure. It just won't put up with it. Their brain just goes, nope, I lean and push, pull into that. So the trick is to know when to use which strategy, right? So every single one of you in this class, your horse is far enough along that you should be using stay in the boat, right? Not gradually phases of pressure. Phase two and three are never a goal. Phase one is the goal. And I don't even like the term phase, because phase still has the connotation that there's pressure in it. I want the way that I ask my horse to do something to be pleasing. So to me, that I wouldn't call that a phase. I just would call it communication, right? I want the interaction to feel good. And if I'm focused on just getting it done with however much pressure is needed, then it will never feel good. It will constantly cause the horse to wish for it to be over, right? So you put them in the mindset of, what do I got to do to get you to stop pulling on me? What do I got to do to get you to stop pushing me? What do I got to do to get you to stop whacking me? And that's not what I that's not what I'm shooting for. I want my horses to be thinking, what do I got to do to keep this happening? That was great. Let's keep going. Not like, oh, I hope this is over soon. So that's where we come to stay in the boat, right? So stay in the boat. We've talked about it before. I know it's not new, but just to get a brief review, you know, the boat is either the halter, or it's my aids, right? My seat, my legs, the reins and the bit, or it's my idea, right? Especially if I'm at liberty, the boat is my picture, right? What am I asking you to do? If my horse stays in the boat, no matter where the boat goes or how I manipulate the boat, then I have a joyful feeling and we have fun. Like, wee, I get a tickly feeling in my belly and, you know, we enjoy each other's company. Listen, guys, there is a reason why those fat little ponies at the 4-H show still meet those little girls at the gate, even though those little girls are sort of pulling and pushing on them, because they're having fun. They forgive the little girls for, you know, their transgressions in, with the use of pressure, because they giggle and laugh and have a good time. They don't take it too seriously or get overly fixated on, you know, something getting done perfectly. So, you know, stay in the boat. If they're in the boat, then everything's good. If a piece of them starts to leak out of the boat, they just get a bite, a nip, right? A piece, you know, something in there that is inconvenient, it's annoying, right? I'm not trying to cause them to be upset or bothered or worried or, you know, defensive in any way. I just have to disrupt the joyful feeling to let them know that they're falling out of the boat. And then as soon as they get back into the boat, I just get a joyful feeling again. You don't release the bite by stopping. You release the bite by getting back into harmony with them. Harmony happens in motion. If the goal is harmony, harmony happens in the doing, not in the stopping of the doing. All right. So when we get, you know, attached to the strategies of, you know, pressure and release, that's where you get stuck in a step or two, right? That is specifically why, you know, some of the tasks on all of my lists has a number of steps that seems like a lot. Like, back your horse by the halter for 15 steps, back your horse with your energy for, you know, 20 feet, whatever it is. I can't remember the specifics, but it's around there. Because I want to see, are you using pressure and release, or have you started to understand and utilize the benefits of stay in the boat? So I feel like I'm just now in a position, you know, probably my age, start to lose your eyesight and all of a sudden you gain clarity. everything in my life can be wrapped around that concept, right? That I can get into a woe is me sort of ho-hum doldrums about how shitty things are and can be, and just accept a medium to moderate amount of pressure and do what I can to get by, utilizing that. And in human terms, that means then I'm always seeking something else. Like I, you know, thank God it's Friday, because Monday through Thursday, I'm wishing for it to be over. And so that lesson applies to me too. I don't want my life to be, thank God it's Friday. I want my life to be like, oh, there's the sweet spot. Let's keep it going. And you know, anytime something starts to feel out of place, then I want my brain and my nervous system to recognize that as information. It's not something for me to resist and get mad or upset about. It's just something for me to notice and start seeking a better path, right? What do I got to do to get back into harmony with the life I want? And, you know, there's sources of pressure, right, that are beyond our control. and that sucks. But you still got to find your sphere of influence. Like, where can I get into a spot that I can use that information as, you know, I can use that pressure as information versus just putting up with a medium to moderate amount of pressure in hopes that, you know, on the weekend I'll feel better. I mean, it's the same for us, right? I don't want a step or two in my life. I don't want a life that I'm wishing for Friday or the weekend or vacation or whatever, or even, you know, 5 o'clock, whatever. I don't even keep hours like that anymore, but so I can't help but relate the two. Like, I think that all of us would, as a species, we'd be a heck of a lot healthier, right? If we could just find ways to use the pressure we feel and experience to be information that says, yeah, you know, this is not where I want to be, and look for where the harmony is and recognize that as a space, you know, that is where you do want to be, or create that space yourself, right? So there you go. Before I forget, and this is going to be completely off topic, we're going to come right back around to stay in the boat. The property right down the road from me is for sale. If you know anybody who's looking for a move and you think that Southern Iowa, like literally a half a mile from me, would be something you'd be interested in, let me know. It's 30 acres. It's a really, and it's a bummer because I never made friends with those neighbors. So obviously it's not listed by me, but I've always wondered what the inside of the house looks like, because it's kind of unique looking. It's a berm home, and there's lots of like concrete things in the like courtyard part of it. So with the listing, you can kind of look at stuff. It's really cool. It's like, you know, in-floor heating and tile and marble floors. There's some carpet like in the bedrooms and stuff. It comes with a shop, 30 acres. The acreage has a pond on it. Nothing's fenced in or set up for animals at all, but the room is there. And the lay of the land will be similar to mine, right? There's some open area, enough open area for grazing, but also a bunch of trees too, that you would be able to, they have some trails already groomed through them, and they're wide enough. They groomed them for their four wheeler, right? So they're, you know, the pictures, the trails are wide, nice and big and open. So anyway, I don't know why that just popped in my head. I just think it's kind of interesting that's for sale. Keep thinking about like, who would I want to live down there, and what do I got to do to get them to want to live there? So horsey friends would be cool. All right, guys, let's talk about stay in the boat, or, you know, whatever you got on your mind. What are you thinking about when it comes to pressure and release versus, you know, seeking the harmony? What's on your mind?
I practiced a couple of the patterns that Charlie and I had been working on, and one of which was a very specific ride your little finger on the line, follow the cones to make the figure eight. And it was fairly specific. Well, it was very specific, but it was, you know, a little more technical than my brain was good with. But the bottom line was, after practicing it with Charlie, doing it a couple times at home, Charlie said, "So cross your arms and ride it." And I went, "What?" And you know what? We did it, and we did it well.
Yay! And, good.
So it, what you're talking about with pressure, even as light as real can be, I still get the habit of applying calf and then going right to a little bit of heel, just because I'm human.
Yeah.
And so Charlie's standing in off to the side with his arms crossed and a great big smile on his face. You know, he didn't say it, but it was like, "See, dummy." Okay. So we've been doing more and more of that, and paying attention to how much pressure I'm really using emotionally and physically is lightening Rio up dramatically. So this is
cool.
Really perfect. And yes, I got stuck in, you know, 1.5 to 2 pressure and thinking that was good until you started talking about this over the last month. So yeah. We're lining up.
Cool. And it was
good information. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for sharing that, Pam. That's great. You know, there's a term in the NRHA guidebook. And the only reason I know this is because I've ridden with Craig Johnson. and he refers to it. And the term is willingly guided. And that's to me what I feel like I'm probably seeking. You know, I would like to be the captain of the ship, and I feel like that's a role I need to earn. It's not a given, right? But it to me, that what I relate it to a bit too is, in my youth, in my 20s, I was a dancing fool. Me and my friend Sherry would go to this dance club close to where we were going to college. And twice a week, Thursday nights were rock and roll nights. We wore our short skirts and high heels. And Saturday nights were country nights. So we wore our tight jeans and cowboy hats, right? And, you know, the goal is always to dance with men. You know, we'd dance with each other if that's what we needed to do. But, and even that was, you know, I wanted to do that too. That was fun. But I think about it in terms of, if a man came and asked me to dance and there was something about him that I didn't like, right? Like just a vibe you get, or you're just not, you know, maybe physically attracted or whatever. If I didn't want to dance with him, no matter how he asked me to dance, it wasn't enjoyable, right? Like as a woman, sometimes you do it because you don't want to come across as like a bitch or whatever, but you know, so you go, but you're like, oh, I can't wait for this to be over. Versus when my husband, when we were, you know, before we were husband and wife, and he'd come to ask me to dance, like he could be kind of not that great of a dancer and I'm still gonna have a good time. He's a great dancer though, but you know, it wouldn't have mattered as much because I wanted to go dance with him. So, you know, I think that really applies here, because I don't want to talk so much about the use of pressure that I get you sort of like paralyzed by, oh no, am I, you know, like giving my horse a hard time here? It does come down to a balance between understanding each other, right? Like having a language that's consistent and reliable and causes the conversation to make sense to them. But also, you know, are we presenting it to them in a way that is attractive to each individual? So, you know, the way that Maxie wants me, you know, to offer, you know, to ask her to dance is different than the way Gina would. You know, Maxie likes playful intensity because she's a pushy stopper. If I use that energy with Gina, she would like get scared of me, you know, like, ah, what are you doing? Why are you mad at me? That sort of stuff. So, you know, lightness is relative. I like the idea of lightness, but I think that sometimes, it's important to understand that it looks and feels different to each partnership. Saturi was the kind of horse that hated legs. She did not like it if I put my legs on her, but if I could guide her with my hips and she found that, you know, acceptable, then I didn't need my legs. It was awesome. Like I literally could guide her by moving my hips. That was amazing. I doubt I'll get that place with Maxie because I dulled her too much. But the point of all of it is like figure out what suits your horse and try to give that, you know, feeling to them, whether that's, you know, more or less. But when you fold your arms, Pam, that's a great way to test the, you know, how much of it am I really like just managing? And you can do it real careful. It does, you know, it can be real, you know, okay with some horses. If you can't get it done with your arms folded, there's probably a lack of seeking harmony there. They're just looking for pressure and release. Well, Bonnie, I see you got your hand raised. Go ahead.
Good morning.
Morning.
Your trip went well, I gather.
Yeah, all good. All good. Thanks. It was a fun time.
Good. Good. This morning I was riding Gigi. I had a student out riding her, and she's very, very beginner student. And after the student was done, I hopped on to do a little extra work with Gigi and invited her to stay and watch and see how my body position is. And one problem we've always had with her deals with staying in the boat, when we were in a round pen and she kind of counterbends to the round pen and her shoulder will leak out of the boat in one direction while her nose is in the other. So I played around today with keep the nose in the boat, but it didn't really help the shoulder any. So is there any strategies for getting that shoulder in line? I tried a little bit of swinging the rib cage over and a little bit of kind of inside indirect rein to bring the nose in to push the shoulder, but the shoulder was still leaking out.
Yeah. So a couple of things come to mind. First of all, the strategy of like put the nose in front of the shoulder that's leaking is a good one. And if it is a habit that she's had for a while, one ride isn't going to fix it. It's going to take several sessions. Yeah. So it might be just that you're on the right track and it just needs more practice. But sometimes I'll just bite the piece that's leaking out, and each bite will be progressively more annoying until they don't want me to do that anymore. So a big, 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 big piece of stay in the boat working is that when you bite them, it has to be annoying enough that they don't want you to bite them again, right? And the longer it takes us to get to that level of pressure, the yuckier it's going to look, the harder you're going to have to bite them. Where if you could bite them, you know, I'm not saying like get in the habit of whacking on them, right? Be conservative, but, you know, build it up until you find the level of pressure that she goes, hey, I don't want you to do that again. And you can say, well, I don't want to either. Stay in the boat. Right. So my guess is either she just needs more practice with discovering that it feels good to be in the boat. And every time she leaks her shoulder out, like put her nose on that shoulder. Like it's a deep bend. Put her nose on the shoulder that's, you know, wanting to lean in. And then, you know, release it when she lifts it, so that she has a strong comparison between here's what happens when you leak out of the boat and here's what happens when you stay in the boat, or, you know, just go to biting it.
I may not be bending the nose in.
Yeah, that's common.
Yeah, I'm probably not bending the nose in enough to be effective.
Mm. Okay, perfect. Yeah, it has to make it uncomfortable, right? It has to be enough of a, you know, consequence that they can have a good contrast. You know, when I do this, this happens. When I do this, it feels nice, right? So they need a strong comparison, right? A big gap between, you know, the happy place and the, you know, your leaking out place. Good?
Yep. Thank you.
Cool. Thanks, Bob. You're welcome. What else you guys got for me today? It's good stuff. Yeah, go ahead, Jan.
It's following along with what Bonnie was asking. Would snaky bends help that or not?
It can. It definitely can, especially if the reason why she's dropping that shoulder is because she's imbalanced, right? If the shoulder's dropping because she's gotten, you know, like strong one way and sort of weak the other, then snaky bends can help, you know, get them equal left and right. And then they oftentimes have an easier time staying upright. It can help for sure. It just depends on, you know, why she's dropping that shoulder.
Okay.
You know, the tricky part is if she's balanced left and right, and then snaky bends won't help. It'll be pressure and release. It won't be stay in the boat. You'll just keep barking orders to her on what to do with her body versus giving her options that make it obvious, you know, what's going to feel good and what's not going to feel good. But if it, you know, I know Gigi, so I don't think that's the case. I think that she's going to need to like have the opportunity like to compare two situations versus like Gina doesn't know, right? She's never had an experience where being ridden felt very good. So I'll be doing snakey bends with her to keep showing her, like, if you, you know, check this out, it feels good. Where Maxie knows, so snakey bends wouldn't necessarily get her to make better choices. I could, you know, like, manage it, but it won't get her to do it herself.
Okay. On a personal note, I rode Tuesday and playing with snakey bends because of the head issue, the brace. I honestly can't remember if you said to go back to a relaxed rein or loose rein. Once she drops, release the reins or relax them, or maintain soft feel.
If she goes to stretch, you know, open your hand, let that happen, right? You know, I wouldn't worry about soft feel in snakey bends. It's about latitudinal bend.
Okay. And then just as soon as she comes back up, just ask her again.
Okay. And it's a similar with snakey bends. Another thing that can happen is helping it, that it can't, snakey bends can help them make better choices too, right? Like when I rode her, if you come up here, I do this with my hands. And she said, well, I don't like it when you do that with your hands. I'm like, well, then try something else. Well, how about this? Oh yeah, when you do that, I, you know, do this with my hands. She goes, oh, that feels better. Well, cool. Which one do you want me to do? It's up to you, darling. You know, like, if you put your head up here, this is what I do. You put your head down there, this is what I do. So, and especially while she's still learning, it has to be real obvious and a big, like, yeah, you got it, but you still keep going, right? You can keep riding whatever gait you're in, whether it's the walk or the trot. You can do it at the canter too, you know, someday when you're ready. Definitely let her stretch. Don't try to keep the, you know, vertical flexion. You can, the goal is longitudinal and latitudinal flexion.
Okay, thanks.
You're welcome. Thank you. Good question. What else, guys? It can be something else too. Go ahead, Erica.
I have more of like a theory question. As you know, Teddy's had some health issues. So I've had some more time to just kind of think about things and maybe reevaluate, I don't know, some of the things I've been doing. And thinking about stay in the boat, I think it's such an interesting way to look at it, because then you're actually looking for harmony and not pressure and release. And I sometimes in my head, I get a little stuck with stay in the boat instead of make the wrong thing difficult and the right thing easy, you know what I mean? Because it's like, well, stay in the boat, but if you get out of the boat, then you're gonna meet pressure. Can you just talk about maybe a little bit how they're different, just so I can get that right in my brain?
Yeah, they're not different. The only thing I would like change in the wording is make the wrong thing difficult and the right thing pleasant, not just easy. Make the right thing enjoyable. So, you know, we get so fixated, I think that it's human nature, we get fixated on teaching them to move away from pressure. That's making the wrong thing difficult. And that's an important part of the process. But if that's all I do, I teach them that it's about, you know, making a bad thing go away. I want to also teach them to move towards a good thing, right? Not just away from an unpleasant thing, but towards a good thing. So the right thing has to feel good. It has to solicit the feel good hormones. I want them pumped full of dopamine and serotonin and oxytocin. Like, we are loving this, you know, and the more we can get the nervous system to experience that, they will literally get addicted to being in the boat. That is how addiction happened, you know? It has to be more than just make the right thing easy. It has to make the right thing has to feel good.
Yeah. And that makes sense, because I think when I think about it that way, it leads me to just the pressure and release thing, you know, where it's just like one step and then you're done, one step and you're done. And I think that's a big challenge, at least for me with Teddy, because he is so pushy. It's so easy to just kind of push him around and use a moderate amount of pressure, but it leads to him being very dull and just tuning me out. And it's not a pleasing interaction, you know?
Yeah, he's tolerant of it because he's a good guy, yeah. Right? But it's also why you got bolted with that day.
Exactly. Yeah, it just causes them.
Yeah, they just disassociate because the disassociation or introversion, however you want to call it, they don't do it because you're making them tense, or you know, it's not like you're giving them a hard time necessarily. They just realize that their brain isn't required. Have you ever had to do a job where the only thing that was required of you is that you could fog a mirror?
Yeah.
My brain checks out.
Me too.
My brain checks out. I don't like it. You know, it's something like repetitive, yeah. That's, you know, manual labor that doesn't require you to think. Your brain wanders. You check out. You don't engage with that activity. So it's the same thing. You know, it's just how can I cause this scenario to be, you know, to need your brain to participate. And lightness, they cannot be light and not be thinking.
Right.
If they're light, they're, you know, with you, if they're light with you, then they're thinking.
Right. And I think it's hard for me too, because the type of personality that I have, it's like, oh, you just want to drill something until it's good, right? Practice, practice, practice. but the type of horse Teddy is, that does not work because he's just bored.
No, you don't get a lot of repetition with pushy horses. And listen, I'm not trying to call you out on anything, my friend, because I don't know your life, but perfectionism is a trauma response, right?
Yeah.
When we want to drill something like that is because we feel like it needs to be perfect. That you need to explore. That's a trauma response. It's a coping mechanism for, you know, somewhere in your life, you got the impression that the only way that you could be safe in your life is if you did everything perfect. And I think a lot of women experience that in various parts of our life. I'm sure guys do it too, but I'm a girl, so I'm going to relate it back to my experience. Yeah. And, you know, it happens for lots of different reasons. It doesn't have to mean that you like had a traumatizing childhood or anything. I'm sure I did it to my kids, you know, because I was, because I am a type A personality, but, we just got to let it be messy.
Yeah. No, you're right. And that's hard for me. And it's something I'm working on, but I appreciate that. Thank you.
You're welcome. Charlie, you got your hand raised. It looks like you're going somewhere.
Yeah. I'm headed off to another lesson this morning. So, but I wanted to say how relevant this morning's opening conversation was about pressure and escalating pressure. And I was troubled yesterday. I had a horse that 4 years old, never been touched, you know, not much of anything. And the client couldn't come to the house to do the lesson. Fortunately, she only lives a half a mile away because she couldn't get the horse loaded in the trailer. So I went to her place anyway. I was having to use a lot of escalating pressure just to get this horse to understand, right? And it doesn't even have a vocabulary in humans still. And I was struggling because I'm trying to reconcile that with how Linda teaches, you know, just a non-escalating every 3 seconds kind of approach. And that stuff just wasn't working. And so I, you know, reverted back to the escalating pressure strategies. And, you know, of course they're working better. This horse still has got a lot of time to start to understand what pressure means you know, how to have a vocabulary a little bit, where she's actually looking to humans for some vocabulary. So anyway, your topic this morning was just so on point for what happened to me yesterday.
Oh,
it was amazing.
Yeah. Cool. Good. I'm glad to help, Charlie. You know, Linda will admit, right, that the How to Talk Horse program is not for beginners. It's not for beginner riders, and it's not for beginner horses, right? So I feel like it's important still for us to we don't need to villainize escalating pressure. I think it serves a purpose during a certain cycle of the relationship. It serves a purpose for horses who aren't tame. It serves a purpose in some of the colt starting sequence, right? I feel like though it just in the Pirelli world, we've just hung on to it too long.
Right.
And so you know, most of the people that are doing the How to Talk course program are like level two or higher. And by the time you've got level one skills, either in the horse or in the human, you can move on. You don't have to stick, you know, with the escalating pressure. You can, we could just, you know, get into the stay in the boat a lot sooner. In most cases, depending on the horse and what, you know, like these two rescue horses I helped Richard with this last couple of days. I think they got a little bit of time before, you know, stay in the boat would make sense to them. So yeah, I mean, we just adjust as needed. Don't get stuck in any one deal with yeah. the goal always being like, what do I got to do so this feels good?
And I think that was, you know, that's the difference, right? In that today I'm looking at, man, I still need to get to, you know, more of that lighter, you know, more of what Linda's teaching, that you know, the Pirelli program in level four kind of teaches it, but it's not in my view as and is in depth as to what teaching it, right? For this stay in yeah. the boat concept that you're talking about, right? So didn't have that, but it just so poignant to be able to go, because I was struggling with myself, right? Going this horse just is not getting any concept whatsoever.
You're cutting out on us, Charlie. That's okay. I get the idea, right? And you guys do too. It's not that it's always one or it's never the other, right? We got to do what's appropriate for the horse that we're working with. But, you know, we got to take into account, I would never expect to use escalating pressure with Maxie or Vanna. It just is not necessary anymore. They understand what pressure means. They don't feel like they're resisting that concept at all. And the other thing that came up while you're talking about that, Charlie, I think a lot of it has to do with the window of trainability, right? So if my horse feels trainable, then I'm going to use stay in the boat. But as soon as my horse feels defensive for whatever reason, because they're confused or they're scared or they're pissy, right? Then I'm going to use escalating pressure. Then the escalating pressure is just to like gain credibility and try to get them back into their comfort zone before I start trying to do stay in the boat strategies again from, you know, get to win the window of trainability. I want access to the window of the trainability from the comfort zone, not from defense mode, right? So escalating pressure is effective when they're defensive. And then that should help you be able to get them back to the comfort zone, right? But, you know, what do we got to do to hit the reset button here? We got off track. And then from there, you know, is there enough understanding between the two of us that we can start having a window of trainability conversation? So that's clarity I just got right now. That's awesome. Thanks, Charlie. those rescue horses were straight up defensive. That, you know, they were in a place they'd only been in for a couple of weeks. It's a really, you know, busy environment, and the older one was 9 and the younger one was 3, and they basically, it was a neglect case, right? So not like they hadn't been, you know, like physically abused, they'd just been neglected. So they're feral. And, you know, if they're not in their window of trainability, then stay in the boat doesn't work. That it's not enough information to help them. You gotta do more. But most of your horses, especially, I mean, when you send me video, they look pretty trainable to me. So when we stick too long to the escalating pressure, then it causes them to check out. They get dull, and you have to whack the shit out of them to bring them back. It's not fun. Don't do it. I in the past, I haven't had the language for it, but I've said to people when I've taken their horses, listen, you need to, and it probably has lost me a few clients, said, you need to understand something. The reason why I just had to whack the crap out of your horse is you. I don't like it, right? They don't want it to feel that way. And the, you know, the human's anthropomorphic interpretation and unwillingness to just like get in and get out makes it worse and worse and worse and worse and worse and worse and worse until eventually you're in a spot where you just have to bash them in order to fix it. It's terrible. I don't like it. In my first 10 week school, I know that's what I was doing with Maxie, and she just kept tuning me out. And it's interesting to me. I'm always trying to figure out a way, like, how can I understand it in a way that's super plain and then, you know, give it to you in a way that's super plain. But my instructor at the time was Helen Topp, and she just kept saying, do something, mate, do something. And I'm like, I don't know what the fuck to do. I don't know what to do. Tell me what. I don't know what you're talking about, you know. And it would have been so easy at the time if she had just said, listen, the amount of pressure you're using is only enough to, like, you're not even registering. You're boring the shit out of her, and she's tuning you out. I could have went, oh, sure, of course. I would have been able to understand that. But she wasn't able to articulate it that way. She'd just say, do something, mate, do something. It's like, well, what? She hates me, obviously. But why? What do I got to do? Right. So usually it's a combination of, we get direct line, so we start at a medium amount of pressure. Instead of offering them a good deal where it's just touch the hair or use your energy, we go right to wiggling the rope, or we go right to poke into the skin, right? Because that's how our brains work. We have to rewire ourselves as much as we're trying to rewire the horses. So we got to start with something that has a chance to feel good. And that's where it really comes into my head about horses are annoyed by a fly landing on them. Like, that's not a lot of pressure. I mean, some of the annoyance is they know that after they land, they're probably going to bite them, right? And so, you know, they'll do something about it, where, you know, we waller around up there thinking that they didn't notice or can't, you know, feel what we're doing. And they can, they just don't know what it means. So in order to, you know, cope, they just tune it out. Listen, you really only have two choices, guys. Either you're causing your horse to be responsive, or you're dulling them. There's no in between those two things. Whatever it is you're asking them to do, you're either getting them more responsive or you're getting them more dull. So start where you want it to finish. Right. And that if your horse is in the window of trainability, if they're defensive, you got to match them. If you start, you know, from a perspective of lightness and they're defensive, well, that's, you're not even going to register on their radar, right? They can't help them. So it's tricky, right? So you got to be ready to switch. I've said it a lot in the last few days, like, it's, you know, mental and emotional gymnastics is kind of psycho. You know, I feel really a little like nuts between, like, you know, boom, boom, boom to match, and then, right back to, like, there you go. You know, it's a little cuckoo. But, you know, the more you practice it, the less weird it feels anyway, as long as nobody's around. I like to do it without an audience. Yeah, good stuff, guys. Good stuff. Thanks for that prompt, Charlie. That actually gave me some clarity around when to use which one, right? So if they're defensive, match them. That's going to, you know, mean escalating pressure. It's going to look like pressure. They need to know how to process pressure. If you can get them in and out of their window of trainability, between the window of trainability and the comfort zone, that's when I'm going to use stay in the boat. Good. Cool. What else? Anything else, guys? Great combo. While I was in North Carolina, they had fiber optic high-speed internet. It was so awesome. I did some video coaching and stuff while I was there. I don't remember who now already, but, you know, I had three or four minute videos. And when I downloaded them, it happened instantly. There was no little waiting for the thing to get all the way around to get it happened like, boom. I'm like, no way. That was so amazing. And so this morning I'm back on my own crappy satellite internet. I'm like, I want their fiber optic was so awesome. Jan, it looked like you were going to say something there. Go ahead.
I was pleasantly surprised at the, you're showing me the scope of the window of trainability, I guess is what I want to say. You know, she's in it where I thought she wasn't. And, you know, that was pretty interesting. And it's like, okay, I don't have to back off here. You know, she's still with me. She's still there. And that was
huge.
That was really, really huge. And
perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah. So for everyone else, guys, what was going on, right, was Jan had the impression that her mare Annie was having a hard time. And my impression was she looks fine to me, you know, and then, you know, we tried and she was fine. She was in the window versus, you know, defending herself by, you know, sort of checking out or anything like that. She was totally fine. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that's important. That's an important thing for us to be able to give to our horses. It honors their resilience and intelligence, right? When we sort of tiptoe around them or hold back a little bit because we don't want them to have a hard time, it comes from love, right? We do it because we love our horses. But this is, I'll tell you how I would relate it. When I first met Shane and his kids, you know, now my kids too, the first thing I started doing for them was treating them like any other kid. Everyone else in their life was treating them like the poor kids that, because their parents were divorced, right? Oh, you know, we don't, you know, expect too much of them because they're going through a lot, right? Now, the reason I was able to do that, because I was like, yeah, I grew up and went through about 5 divorces in my life. I'm okay. You know, like, so it, I had a little different perspective than their family members. Shane's divorce was the first divorce in his family. Like nobody had ever been divorced before. So, you know, they were all figuring it out and, you know, trying to do their best, but I came in and like, yeah, that's not okay for any kid to do regardless of their parents are divorced or not. And, you know, was just real, just treated them the same as I would treat any other kid. Like, no, you're not going to speak to me that way. You're not going to speak to your dad that way. You're not going to speak to your grandmother that way. That's inappropriate. If you want to change your tone, I'd be happy to talk to you. But as long as you're being a little brat, you can go away, you know. And I feel that happens, you know, and I do it with Maxie too. So don't at all feel like I'm immune to that. I for sure make excuses for her. I don't, even while you were here, right, Jan? I'm like, oh my God, it's so great to ride her. But I harbor all of this, you know, guilt about her being my sacrificial lamb. So I just, you know, let her do her thing for the most part. And it's really sad actually, because she's only 21. She's got lots of good miles left on the tires. I should definitely, there'd be no reason for me to not keep exploring what's possible with her. I could pick a goal. I've every once in a while thought, well, I should just, like, you know, pick an intro level dressage test and see if we could, like, put the ingredients together for shits and giggles, not because I'd actually go to a dressage show. But so yeah, it's sad when you hold them back because we have guilt. But it's honorable too. It's not, you know, I'd rather that than the opposite, where you just, like, bang around on them without any, you know, acknowledgement of what we've already put him through. But yeah, she's fine. She's good to go. She can handle a lot. Good. And Maxie is too. You saw Maxie's fine too. We make up shit about it. They're fine. I had a ride once with Linda a long time ago. I don't even know what year it was. It was a long time ago, but we were trying to figure out contact, and it's really hard with a pushy stopper, you know, like, take the bit forward. That's not, it was hard. We can do it now, but it was a difficult journey for us both. And I was riding with Linda, and there was a bunch of other people in the arena. And I just stopped. I'm like, this is hard. She's confused. I'm confused. I don't know what to do. She's just shutting down. She was rearing is what she was doing. If you ever want to ride with contact, don't teach that horse to rear. But Linda rides up to me and says, you know, hey, what are you doing? Why are you just sitting here? And I'm like, listen, do I really need to put her through this? Like, Satori's coming along. I'll figure it out with Satori. I don't need to put Maxie through this. it's, you know, we're both confused. It sucks. We don't like it. You know, I feel bad. And I said to her, I feel bad. Like, I feel bad. She's already been through so much to be, you know, to get me here. You know, do I really need to put her through more to understand this thing you're trying to teach me? And she's like, oh, get over yourself. She's never had it any better than she has it today. I'm like, that's true. You know, I'm the best version of me today, you know, versus, you know, when she was 2 or 4 or whatever. So, you know, I think it's healthy to have some of that in there, but at the same time, they're often a lot capable of much more than what we give them credit for. Good stuff.
Yeah. Maybe we're just making excuses for ourselves that we are struggling and gosh, am I ever going to get this and yada, yada, you know, not for that sure. It's us.
Yeah, for sure. I 100% agree. Yeah. But I think we could do the same for ourselves, right? As soon as we say, like, you can handle this, we could do the same for ourselves, right? I got this. I can handle it. Yeah. Give ourselves the same grace. All right, guys. I'm going to go see my horses. Bonnie, is your hand raised? Please go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to add to what Jan said, that it's definitely us, because I have, like, just dragged my feet on getting Ruby out in a round pen and learn and cantering her and feeling what her canter feels like. I can canter any other horse you put me on, not her. So when I was down in November with Mackenzie Courtney, you know, my thing was, I want to canter on this horse before I leave here while I have people here to help me. And, you know, basically she had the same reaction. You know, it's not your horse. Your horse is fine. She's a little emotional, but you need to ride her in a canter and stop riding her in a trot and expecting her to canter. So, it's us. It is definitely us.
Yeah. But the important thing to remember there, though, right, is we train ourselves the same way we train our horses and give ourselves the same level of empathy and compassion, right? Like, you have to explore, like, am I in my window of trainability? If I'm in my window, then I can, you know, realistically expect to move forward and have that develop resilience and skill. If I'm defensive, right, for whatever reason, it could be because I'm making some shit up. But if I'm in defense mode, then that means my nervous system is, first of all, the prefrontal cortex goes offline, folks. You literally lose up to 10 IQ points as soon as your body gets into fight or flight. Right? Because resources get reallocated to systems that are used for fight or flight. The prefrontal cortex is not one of those. So we stop, you know, sending energy to our thinking brain and it goes into, you know, the instincts. So, you know, we got to honor that too. That has to be part of the process. And I mean, Mackenzie obviously saw that you were still inside your window. And then we got to not coddle ourselves at the same time, right? If I am in my window, like I have a similar issue, Bonnie, but it's even more basic. Like, I just need to ride Gina. Every time I've watched the video back and in my head, I've made it up that she's spooking. I watch it back and she's totally fine. She's 100% fine, right? So, you know, that, but it's important. But as soon as I get on her, I am on the edge of my window and it doesn't take much for me to get popped into defense mode. The greatest thing happened though when Jan and Leanne were here. Leanne's trying real hard to get her horse responsive. She's got, you know, it's a struggle. Let's just say it's a big deal, okay? And so she's carrying a stick that has the little popper on the end, like the little, you know, the crappy thing. And you know, Leanne's focused on her horse as she should be. And I'm focused on my horse, but when I'm riding with students, I need to keep track of what else is going on. And I didn't for a second. And Leanne was behind me and she gives her horse a really like firm bite on the shoulder. And that like leather popper thing made a big like smack. And Gina took a pretty big leap forward. And it's a really scary, I don't like it. The feeling when you feel the butt go down, like so, you know, horse trainers would say they grab their ass. She grabbed her ass for just a second. And the two cool things happened. One, the sound that came out of my mouth was whoopsie, which I love. I've trained myself to do that, versus the sound coming out of my mouth being something aggressive, right? Like, fuck. I just went whoopsie. And when I used the reins to ask her to stop, she did. I was like, whoop, whoop. I mean, it took me a while for my heartbeat to come back down. I kept checking it. It went like through the roof. It took several minutes. I think I actually ended up having to get down. But I got back on. And, you know, so, you know, it was, I think, good for both Gina and I, where we were like, yeah, of course, stuff's happened. It's not going to be sunshine and rainbows all the time, every minute of every ride. And, you know, we had a little adversity and we handled it. It was good. It was confidence building. Pamela, I see your hand is raised twice. She did. She spoke twice. It happened twice. The second time, though, it was a lot less, right? The first time was a pretty big leap forward. And the second time, Leanne did it again. And of course, a little bit of my instincts came out. I'm like, you got to not do that behind me, man. Like, I appreciate like you're trying to do the right thing for your horse, but no, stop doing that. I'm going to die. So yeah, there was still, I was still a little bit defensive, to say the least. Pam, your hand was raised. Did you have something to add?
No, it was a boo-boo. I'm in the grocery store now.
Oh. Okay, no worries. No worries. Just checking. Yeah, Dan, go ahead.
Quickly say to everyone, Christy rode Gina at a trot for the longest she's ever done while we were there doing figure eight. Yeah, I know it.
Yeah, it was awesome.
She rode her every day except Friday. She rode her every day we were there. Friday was the only day we didn't ride her.
I didn't have the emotional fitness. I had to put a horse down, but yeah, it was awesome. And the worst part, though, well, I mean, it was great no matter what. And I have witnesses, and Jan, thank you for acknowledging that. My Pivo was misfiring, so I didn't get it. So otherwise, I would have already posted it everywhere. I could brag about it, but yeah, it was great. It was, I think, you know, it was so helpful to have Jan and Leanne here, because their horses are a good energy, right? When they come to the arena, they have good energy. And that really helped Gina a lot to have horses in the arena with her, versus, you know, most of the time I'm here by myself. So I have to try to, you know, get something done with just me and her. I've turned Vanna loose and Maxie loose in the arena with her before, and that helps some, but it was way different when you guys were here riding around, kind of doing your own thing. It was way better for her. So thanks for that. That's good stuff. Oh. All right, guys. Well, I haven't seen my horses yet since I got back, except for looking out the window. So I think I'm going to go see my girls, check in on how they're doing. But thanks for the great conversation this morning. I would love to hear from you. If you got video for me, send it on. Email me, whatever floats your boat. And in the meantime, I hope things are going well for you. Talk to you again next week. Thank you. Have a good day. Bye. Thank you.